huge amounts of women come in here and say, I'm so ashamed. I don't understand my portfolio. I'm so ashamed. I've never had the discussion. I mean, their shame is everywhere. Men don't feel shame around money, even when they're idiots. That's the truth.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 17 of Flourish for Female Leaders, a podcast for women who want to close the gap between being stressed and striving and impactful and thriving. I'm your host, Lisa Martin, and on today's episode, I'm very fortunate to have with me Tracy Themes, who is the co-founder of the Sophia Wealth Academy. Now, Tracy has an MA in counseling psychology, and she is a certified financial planner. She's been awarded the International Alliance of Women Global 100 Award for her work in empowering women through education. And her book, The Financially Empowered Woman, has helped thousands of women enhance their financial literacy and build their wealth. What Tracy and I talk about in today's episode is why financial education is not the key to female empowerment, and that closing the gap between what you know and what you do is. We also get into how to confidently have a tough financial conversation with others, and why women are equal to or superior than men in terms of making financial decisions. And lastly, we focus on how women can get comfortable with economic power and why perhaps you should pay for your meal on a first date. So with that, please welcome my guest today, Tracy Themes. Hello, Tracy Themes. Thank you so much for being on Flourish for Female Leaders podcast. I'm so excited to have you here today. We've got so much to talk about with regards to the topic of wealth. And I want to dive right in and talk to you about the Sophia Wealth Academy, because this is something that you've been working on for a while, and I've had the opportunity to participate in it. So tell me how it came about and what it's all about.
It started out because I was convinced that financial education was the key to women's financial empowerment. That really the only thing we needed, if we could just get up that learning curve, understand the difference between a stock and a bond and what asset allocation was and the difference between a registered and non-registered investment, that we would take over the world. That was the only thing missing, really, was that we were being cut out from education on our terms. The psychologist in me understood that a lot of the financial literacy models were based on a different way of thinking and a context that wasn't relevant for most women. Okay. So the first Wealth Academy was just like, we're going to get this information, everything a woman needs to know in a day about money. It would be on her terms, using examples she could relate to with female, really dynamic speakers, and then the problem would be solved. We would be wealthy and we would take over the world. That's how it started.
How many years ago was that when you did
10.
This? 10. So a decade ago. So you've been doing this for a while.
Okay. Yeah, the last one we did was the 10th Sophia Wealth Academy. And I've learned a lot, of course, doing something 10 times. This time we had 17 different speakers, 3 different streams for breakout, 350 people in the room. It was like full light. I always have the day is in light. I've learned don't put women who have had to work all week, don't stick them in a dark room. We can't handle it. Like, we're already shadowed enough about money. We're already stressed. We need sunshine. So I agreed with the divine to get sunshine. We do it all. And the interesting takeaway from me, we just reviewed the 300 sort of responses, and it's the same issues, which is everybody says they need financial education. But what I've identified is that there is a real gap between knowing and doing. This gap for us is, it's not simple. It's a complicated gap. And it's not, each woman has different things in that gap that impede them. So just like, okay, I'm just going to slot together a 3-part series on the gap, okay, and that'll fix it. Well, it doesn't, because your gap is very different than a 23-year-old woman's gap. is very different than a woman whose husband just died who's 75. It's very different from someone who's been on welfare or somebody who's managing an inheritance. So the two words in that have come up for us in the debriefing of this last Wealth Academy are the words gap and root. The gap is this, whatever the things are that are in the middle between what a woman knows. And make no mistake, women have the brains to be amazing investors. There's nothing about us as a gender that would in any way preclude us from being equal or even superior decision makers at the economic table. So that is just wiped off. That is not, I even neurologically did research. Is it possible that our brains aren't what? No, not possible. So we have the goods, but there's a gap. So that's my first. The root is, what is it in how we were raised? The subtle dripping of expectations, responsibilities, role modeling, mentoring, and the confusing messaging that women receive from the time basically they're born and put into a pink bonnet that ends up impeding us at 35, 45, and 55 in terms of our comfort around economic power. Everybody just keeps asking me for education, but the education has to be much more psychological in nature. And I'm really grappling with what that might look like, you know, other than just telling mothers not to dress their kids with pink bonnets, and which is what I, one thing I've come up with. There, it's, I've spent the whole last week really in self-reflection and reflection and listening to the responses about what do we do do that fifth, you know, that fifth part of your wheel of flourish for wealth? How do we make that as interesting and make us feel as confident as we do in our relationships, for instance?
This is really interesting because when you talk about, because I was at your 10th Wealth Academy, and congratulations, it was a fantastic.
It was great seeing you there in the room. I felt confident seeing your smiling face there, encouraged me.
but you know, I mean, it's interesting because when we talk about the Flourish Success Path and we talk about stage five being build your wealth, which is all about supporting your dreams, right? So the idea is, what is the financial base that you need to get you where you want to go? What's important to you? And like you're saying, it's very self-defined abundance. You know, what is abundance to me versus what it is for you, Tracy, or anyone else who is at the Wealth Academy? It's a very unique value proposition. So I can see why you're seeing that there's not that one thing, but you've been able to identify the gap between, and I see this all the time in the coaching work I do, but identifying the gap between knowing something and doing it, you know, two different things. What was interesting, so I got two questions. So what was interesting about what I loved about the Wealth Academy was when people came, one of the women came up and talked about all the jargon and acronyms, and you know how there's the R, you know, RESP,
TFSA.
And it's true, there's a lot of jargon that can be, I want to say intimidating, but it can be not interesting, right? Like you have to go through another layer to understand what that is versus it being, you know, really, really straightforward. So I don't know if that's part of the gap for people, because are you saying that even when we get more educated about it, are we not taking the steps that we need to create?
Lisa, I could teach you every acronym and every piece of jargon in under 10 minutes at your intelligence level.
Yeah.
You could have it memorized by 30. Yeah. And I could have you speaking in full sentences at 45 minutes. I'm still not convinced that you would be able to walk into a financial advisor and have a portfolio discussion that you are super confident in. It would be better. And we have worked a lot on linguistics. We have worked a lot on simply language. And when people come into my office, I often just write a prescription.
Yes.
I'll just give them the sentence to use. Like, we've spent an hour talking about what the issues are. And then I'll actually tell them, read from this sheet. And it does build confidence because I've told them what to say.
So that would be
perfect. Don't go back. They still don't do it 50% of the time.
Okay. So let's talk about that, because I know for me that, you know, when you go in to have those conversations, you don't want to feel like you don't understand, right? Or that, so this is great. This is helpful what you do to people to help them speak the language. Let's put it that way. You're not confused by the language. Just because you don't understand the language doesn't mean that you aren't bright enough to figure out how to do it. It's like if you go into a foreign country and you have to go speak a different language, it takes a while to get the cadence of the language. It doesn't take anything away from your own ability to learn or intelligence level. It's just you're in a different environment, right? So you've got to adapt to the environment.
It's practice. It's just like when we teach negotiation, when we teach conflict resolution, when we teach people to have financial conversations at home with their spouse. I spent quite a bit of time in the last 3 years actually formulating communication strategies so that people would have a format for how to talk about money. And even when I was talking to 200 women lawyers last year, they even pulled out their pen and paper to write down, like, they're the most literate professional group, right? Like, they talk all day.
Not to stereotype, but they usually like to have a good argument. Like,
they're negotiators and arguers. That's the profession.
Yeah, they're excellent at it.
When I asked them what was their impediment at home, it was language. So I was, well, here's three sentences I've learned to use. And they're all like furiously writing and then emailed me back that the sentences work. That's a small piece, though. If I spent my whole life just teaching people language, I would also have to teach them, and you identified this, how to overcome our sense of shame almost that we're so uncomfortable. Huge amounts of women come in here and say, I'm so ashamed. I don't understand my portfolio. I'm so ashamed. I've never had the discussion. I mean, their shame is everywhere. Men don't feel shame around money, even when they're idiots. That's the truth. And lots of them are. There's not the same level of emotional content about it. One thing I was suggested to me, so you just used the phrase that wealth is the fifth wheel, the fifth piece of the flourish wheel. And a woman I really respect a lot, a very successful financial kind of a real powerhouse in Vancouver, recently said to me, why isn't the first thing we teach girls? Get the money done. Once you get the money, you can do anything. Then direct your career. Then negotiate for your relationships. Mm-hmm. Then figure out your energy. Do all that, but get the money done. Mm-hmm. And I was like, it made me laugh. And I was like, well, think about how much more resilient I am at 23 than I am at 53.
Yeah.
I don't feel so stupid because I'm stupid about everything at 23. Right?
No.
But you know what I mean? I have more bounce in my knees at 23.
Well, you have less to lose.
I expect that I'm learning about dating. I expect that I'm learning about the career world. You know, I expect to fall a little bit, right? Like I'm in an advanced toddler stage of adult development in that I'm a little bit more flexible and resilient. So what if we did the hardest thing first?
Yeah.
Which is actually what men do. They handle money first. They talk about finances first. So they have their crisis of meaning at the age of 50, typically in Western society. So I would say, let's just reverse this. And let's have our crisis of meaning at 50. Whereas 50 is typically 40, 50 is when women start getting mad about money. And I'm like, let's get mad at 22.
Well, it's interesting you say that. And so when you talk, you know, when we talk about the Flourish Success Path, it's a circular model. So wealth can, you know, it's contiguous. But the best thing that happened to me in my 20s was in the office that I worked in, there was a guy around my age who was really into finance and money, right? And he, in fact, he wrote a lot about it in the job that I was in. And he gave me some of the greatest tips at like the age of 24 about setting up, you know, my RRSP and doing that. So I started really young. And I have to say that, but I don't know much, but I did know to do that. That was the best piece of advice that I ever got, because that money that I put away and I learned about compound interest at 24 is helping me out a lot, you know, today, right? Yes. So even those, I agree, even those early things. But I want to come back to this gap that you've identified. What advice do you have for our listeners about trying to close that gap between the knowing what you want to do and the actual doing what you want to do about setting yourself up, you know, for financial success, whatever that means to you, because as we've said, it's unique to each person.
Well, I think we've hit one important nail on the head with communication. I think for us, because to some degree, we've been culturally programmed to believe that relationships are survival for us. So we don't like to do things in general. Now, we're not born this way, Lisa. This is stuff that society has taught us and dripped on us. And that's what I have to deal with. So there's two issues in this gap. One is how we raise girls, which is a separate issue. But now you and I are the products of how we were raised and our societal influences. So I think finding gracious ways of communicating, I could spend a couple hours maybe just talking about the different sentences. All of us have a way we talk to our children. We have a way we talk to a dry cleaner when there's a button missing. Most successful women have a communication protocol of how we will broach things. One of mine is, would you be willing to have a discussion with me about our heating and cooling system? Like, I'll do a would you be willing. That's yes. Tracy's way. Yeah. And I'm known for saying, I'm just wondering. Mm. So that's part of my protocol as a way of moving into a difficult conversation. So I think maybe communication and having women getting a bridge there for how they can talk first.
What's a great bridge? So, I mean, that's really interesting. So because often where our challenge is, we spend more time worrying about having a conversation than when we're actually in that, once we're in it, it's never as bad as sometimes we think it's going to be or as challenging. So what is a sentence to start that? Say you want to have that financial discussion with someone else other than yourself. I mean, you got to start with yourself first, obviously, but if you want to have it with someone else, what do you recommend?
Well, the one I've been using for the last year and a half has been, would you be willing?
Would you be willing?
So before you have a discussion with a spouse, because it's always troubling. Like there's the partnerships, business and personal partnerships are very difficult places to have monetary discussions. And they're our most important. So I might not even practice on a spouse, but let's say that's so important that I have to get it. I don't think anybody likes financial things dumped on them. I think we need time to emotionally prepare. So my thing, and I started practicing this with my teenager, with my daughter, who was on the couch basically for about 6 months when she was in her late teens. And I started to, it was like we'd hit the line. 6 months is long enough for anybody to have a personal crisis, in my opinion. And at this point, you have to identify what's going on. So you either need a therapist or we need to take you in hand in some way. You need support, mentorship, but just laying there. Reflection's important. Mm-hmm. And I'm okay with somebody stewing for a while, but there's a point where the stew gets burnt, right? So my daughter's stew was burning and I needed to talk with her and she was very defended. So that's where I started researching what are some ways. And I said to her, would you be willing to have a difficult conversation with me about your life? And she looked, she said, maybe. And I said, what would be the best way to have that happen? She says, well, how long will it take? And I said, 17 to 18 minutes. I might have time on Sunday, she says. I said, what time on Sunday would be best for you? 2:00. And where would you feel best having this difficult conversation? I want it outside around the picnic table.
Oh,
neat. Great. This is Tuesday.
Yeah.
Why shut up? From Tuesday to Sunday, I honored it. So that put power, that balanced power. Then on Sunday, and I did it in 14 minutes, just so you know. And she was willing.
The expectations, yeah.
She was willing. Then I started using that in other difficult conversations. So it could be 2 weeks from now. You don't sit down after a hard day at work with three screaming kids who are having trouble going to bed and start talking about, you know, the fact that the checking account is overdrawn. I think we create space and willingness. And because money has been always, we've been socialized to believe that it is personal, private, sacred, dirty, blah, blah. It's so values laden. So let's create some space for it. Then that other person has a chance to hold themselves with some dignity. And then the next sort of communication things are more of the I'm wondering about.
Okay.
And it's adopting a position of curiosity. I'm wondering why it is. How did we get it set up that you always manage the money and I don't? Mm-hmm. Can you remember how that happened?
Mm.
So you start getting curious and it's not a trap. Ask the questions that your heart is truly curious about. So you've had some time, because typically people aren't willing that moment to have the discussion.
And the same would be as if flip, it could be, I'm wondering how it got that I'm always the one that's managing.
Or that, yes.
Flip side.
How did this happen?
Yeah.
And it's always interesting to hear what people say. Yeah. But now we're in a relationship. And so we're, for most women I know, we're not talking about money anymore. We're actually having a discussion. And so we're in a better. And that's the same sets of principles I would use in a negotiation with a non-family member as well. You know, you don't just go to your boss and say, I want 20% more. So would you be willing to have a conversation about my compensation package?
Yeah.
Yes. Well, when would that be best for you? You know, or they say no. I did have a woman whose husband said no. He wasn't willing. So she called me in a quite distressed. And I said, well, there's a second question, if you remember, which is, would you be willing to talk about why? And so his response when she went back with that question was, yes, I'm willing to talk about why. And then she did the same thing. When? I'm willing to talk about that right now. Every time we talk about it, you cry and scream and throw things at me. Okay. So now we've got into something we can
figure
that one out. And then once you get into it, we can at least identify what are the things we're agreeing about and what are the things that we really need to find some shared language and some shared objectives. Mm-hmm. But then it's kind of romantic. It's exciting. It's interesting, even if it's with a boss. Mm-hmm. Now we're into a relationship. So we're not into an economic discussion. We're into a discussion of values, and most of us are better there.
I really like that, because it gives you a process to follow to have that conversation. And sometimes that's all we need is, mm-hmm. is a little bit of a few tips on how to approach it.
It's the start.
It's the start. Because then once you get in, you know,
yes.
And it's a quite a, listening to you, it feels like quite a freeing thing too, because you said there's so much emotion and things laden with those conversations to have them more frequently too. So the more, I would imagine, the more that you do this, the easier it gets and
yes.
the better those conversations are.
Absolutely. You know, think about someone who, the women you know, who are now like professional negotiators.
Yes.
Do you think they started out being that comfortable? Do you think a lawyer starts out their first case in court? Like, they're vomiting. They all talk about it. Their first case, they're, where they're in front of a judge, they throw up. Well, they're not throwing up by the time they're 50, or they'd have no vocal cords. They figured it out, right? Practice is, and then I think the context of practice is we need some support. It's very hard because women do not typically talk about this with each other. Mm. We talk about relationships, our kids, our hair, where we're getting pedicures. And I don't mean to minimize, but if I just look at how I talk about things with my friends,
yeah.
we are rarely discussing, even my friends, and money's the most interesting thing in the world to me. Even they aren't interested in talking to me about their net worth while we're having wine. Like,
yeah.
it's just not part of a conversation.
It's interesting. And I think that could have a lot to do with what you're saying about socialization and cultural taboos and what you do talk about and don't talk about and what we think potentially as women is appropriate conversation or what is even on top of mind for us. Right. So I think that's interesting. You and I have talked about this before a little bit about this concept of women. Because we're starting to get into this relationship side of it, right? You know, and when you talk about relationships amongst people, I'm also thinking about my own relationship or women's relationship to money, how we relate to it, relationships, love, power. How does all of this, is this complex, yeah? But how does all this, in your experience, what have you seen? How does this all fit together or not fit together?
We could talk for 10 hours about that. The first thing that I'm finding...
That would be a really long podcast.
Yeah. The first thing I find very troubling is I've become almost boring in my discussions about first dates. A lot of the cultural assumptions that a man picks up the tab starts there. Women are always angry with me when I talk about you have to, right from the beginning, first date, have the discussion, which is, to me, a very simple question. Would you mind if we had a quick chat about how we're going to handle the bill? I'm perfectly happy to pick it up. I'm perfectly happy to pay half. What are you comfortable with? Well, I assumed I was going to pay. Well, how would you feel if we just decide we're going to split it right off the top? There's not a man alive who doesn't go, that'd be great. So that's a practice. Mm. So we've practiced right from the first moment. And women fight back, but where's the romance? And I said, since when has money and romance? And that's where we get into tricky stuff. And I had three CPAs come up to me, it was 3 or 4 weeks ago, furious. They said, well, this gets in deeply, so we won't go further. But they said they do nothing. They don't carry their weight. The least they can do is pay. That's what I said. But these are mid-career professionals, three of them who came up. Mm-hmm. So I thanked them for sharing their frustration. And I said, it is complicated, but I can't stop thinking about how angry they were. Mm-hmm. So to me, this isn't a monetary issue. It's social issues as well, right? Yeah. And maybe we need to be negotiating differently in other areas as well. But mm-hmm. the first date thing, I've been doing this with young people too. Mm-hmm. And there's the men, young and old, are happy to have that discussion.
Well, it's more than that though, Tracy, I think listening to you, it's not that one isolated moment in time. It's you're setting a framework for the future if you happen to continue on in that relationship. Yes, I think
right.
I think that's what you're saying is you're saying the message in there is we're equal playing partners in this thing called how we're managing our money, whether it's individually or together.
Yes.
The subtleties that go with having someone take control of that.
Right.
Right from the day one.
Correct. Yeah. And it was also interesting. So I taught, I don't know, there was about 100 business grads from Sauter School of Business a couple months ago. So you're talking 25, 35. And I asked if any of the women had actually just picked up a tab, like right from the beginning, first date, picked up the tab. And so maybe 5 said they had. They'd had an experience of doing that. And I asked them how they felt. All 5. It was exhilarating. It was empowering. Mm-hmm. It made me giggle. Mm-hmm. It made the whole date. And I was like, I thought that was interesting too, right? Like their hearts weren't beating fast. And every time, I don't know about you, but every time I pick up a tab, I just feel wealthy. Mm. I feel gracious. Mm. I feel generous. Mm. I feel like a big person. Mm. So we have fallen for this idea that being paid for makes us feel good. Mm. I think we're being perhaps psyched out from the very essence of power that would lead us forward in every other part of our life mm-hmm. by simply either having the discussion or reaching for it. Yeah. Start simply, I think.
I agree. It's a way of establishing a protocol is probably not the right word, but
architecture almost.
Show up, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And it's not what you're saying is not, it's more about understanding how you want to be in a relationship with yourself with money and with other people with money. Right.
Yes.
And getting clarity around that first, so that it was a negotiation. You're saying, here are the options, which way should we go? And right then and there, you're finding out a lot about yourself and how you relate to that person to begin with. It's a great conversation to have on a first date. It'll tell you a lot about where this relationship may or may not go in the future.
That's what I think.
Yeah.
If nothing else, it's not boring.
Well, it's good practice too. You know, listen, I want to talk to you specifically about flourishing because, you know, what we're talking about is how these are great tips that you've given us in ways in which we can manage ourselves around abundance and wealth and having those conversations and looking at how we close the gap. I love that. Some really tangible pieces. So thank you. And I want to get into you and this idea of when we talk about flourishing, what does it mean to you? Like, and what do you do to flourish personally for yourself?
I think it's a complicated question. It used to be more clear for me. And I think one of the things that happened with the Wealth Academy was I got confused about for myself. I really want to make a contribution. I know that sounds so trite, but I really want to feel that me walking on this planet meant something. I want to leave a legacy. And the area I want to leave a legacy is I really want to help my sisters. And I really want this to be a better world, a more equal, fair world. That's what I want. And I want to be part of that. Flourishing to me, I'm very motivated for achievement. So in some way, achieving that gets me up in the morning, makes me excited, makes me feel sexy. Like, I'm not somebody who like, oh, my hair's perfect. I'm having a good day. I'm somebody who's like, wow, I just sent a couple out who are now having conversations about money and I think they're going to get it. That's what turns me on. And how to do that, I'm not so sure anymore because my appetite for extreme stress is very low now. I was better at it in my 20s. I'm not saying I can't handle it, but yeah. I would prefer to have challenges and be interested, but without almost like that throwing up feeling, I really would prefer to avoid it. So I'm not sure how to move forward on my path. Like we talked about it being iterative. Mm-hmm. I think I'm starting at the gate of a new world. Now, if we did my way, which is I handle wealth first, mm-hmm. I have it done. Then I move to the next one and I'm like, okay, well, that one is half. And, you know, I'll move sort of through this steps. And I have been looking at the model myself. I think it's a very robust model, Lisa. And I would just say, I don't know exactly, except that I'm not going to just sit with my fingers up my nose. Mm-hmm. I will actively put one foot in front of the other mm-hmm. to engage now with my new information and new insights I have about myself, new insights I have about my professional calling mm-hmm. and see what I can do with it. I'm just, mm-hmm. and I have been amassing mentors and friends and colleagues mm-hmm. to talk. Like I need my women, dominantly women. There are men in my circle, but I need my people to hold conversation and space for me while I start on the track again.
That's exciting though.
Yeah, like everybody, it's exciting, upsetting, anxiety provoking, interesting. Yeah, it's a period of when you sit in uncertainty for a little bit, what is flourish mean to me? Where am I going with that? I do have an aptitude for discomfort, mm-hmm. but I will say it is uncomfortable.
Well, I'm looking forward to hearing where you land with all of that. I want to thank you so much for being here today and sharing your wisdom. Now, if people want to find you, Tracy, how can they find you?
Very easy. Just go to sophiafinancial.ca and we can be reached there by email. And that's my company name. And that's sort of the hub of the wheel of all the things that I do and where the classes that I teach are. It's all there.
And I think you're underplaying it a little bit. Sophia Wealth Academy has a ton of resources mm-hmm. for women who are interested in building their wealth. So if you're looking for tools and tips and classes and information, it is a wonderful resource. So I really encourage everybody to check that out. And thank you, Tracy, so much for being here.
A pleasure. Great way to start a day, Lisa. Thanks.
All right, that's it for this episode of the Flourish for Female Leaders podcast. If you want to know more about Tracy Themes, head on over to my website, lisamartininternational.com/podcast, and grab the show notes. And while you're there, don't forget to download your free copy of the Flourish Success Path and Assessment, because you can't close the gap between striving and thriving if you don't have a plan. And if you're a member of my Flourish community, make sure you access the private chat with Tracy and I. We get personal about why she really started the Sophia Wealth Academy, what the difference is between a happy and unhappy successful person, and why we want to avoid an insufficiency hangover. That's it for this episode. I'm your host, Lisa Martin. Thank you so much for listening. I'm back next time with Lori Cuquera, and we're talking about self-love. So if you haven't already, make sure you have subscribed to the podcast via iTunes so you don't miss this episode of Flourish for Female Leaders.